1039 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. It is Feldis and Kale, a delight to have you along with us. And as always, we are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Farmers and Granite State Dairy Promotion. And joining us right now is our good friend, John Clayton. John, the Executive Director of the Manchester Historic Association at the Milliard Museum, located at 200 Bedford Street in Manchester. John, how are you today?
I am well. I'm sitting out on my deck at my home, and what a beautiful New Hampshire morning it is.
Oh, that is for sure. That is for sure. And we're sitting here in our basement studios, plush but not overly ostentatious.
The bunker.
The bunker would be a good way to put it.
That's where they put us, John.
We are buried in the bunker. But at any rate, we mentioned that you were the executive director of the Manchester Historic Association, the great Milliard Museum in Manchester in the Milliard. So nothing, John, in my mind, tells the story of Manchester like the Milliard Museum, a place that really is forever evolving.
Thank you. It is. And let it be known before we start that I am a Bruins fan in mourning this morning, as are many others. So
very true. Very true.
Life goes on. Life goes on.
Before you go on, John, let me just ask you a question. Would you have started Swayman last night?
I would not. I would have started Rask, but I reached the conclusion that we had better players and they had a better team. And that's what proved our undoing in the end.
There you go. All right. So continue. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, John, but I had to get your take on that.
You got it. We've done too many hockey games together to not talk about
that. Right. Exactly. So continue with the story of the Milliard Museum.
Yeah, we have been open since last July. You know, we had the 3-month shutdown that everybody went through, and we've been operating under some capacity restrictions. Our building is owned by the U.S. First Robotics Competition, and when you are subject to the rules of a science-based institution, caution has been their watchword throughout. So our capacity is now up to 60 guests at one time. But the good news is that we're going to hold our Historic Preservation Awards in person on September 8th at the Rex Theater. Our good friend Ray Guerin says we can accommodate 200 people at the moment. We expect that to go to the full 300 capacity by the time we get to September 8th. So it's exciting to, you know, entertain the notion of bringing people together again to celebrate what we do.
Well, absolutely. And, of course, I'm sure many of our listeners today have not had an opportunity to visit the Milliard Museum. And you say you are open to 60 capacity?
Yeah, and we've had really good numbers. We had our first school field trip last week, one in 15 months.
Wow.
And I can't even tell you what a relief it was to hear the sound of kids and laughter in the museum again. It's what we strive to do from the moment we opened the door, and it was really good to have the kids in.
No doubt about it.
And John, there is so much going on, obviously, and you do such important work. I'm just wondering, were you involved in the Chandler Mansion controversy and how that all shaped out?
I'm proud to say I was. Apparently, I've been the biggest thorn in the bishop's side in the last 5 years because of my urgency attached to preserving the Chandler House.
Yeah.
So I was the one who actually brought it before the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance, and they responded immediately, put it on the list of their 7 to save. And that was almost 6 years ago. I think I left my first board meeting to go to Concord for that purpose. And when we do our preservation awards, one of the interesting coincidences, since you brought it up, Dan, is that we are honoring the grassroots group, the Save the Chandler House movement, for their community activism. So when we do our preservation awards in September, that group will be among the honorees. Because,
oh, that's great.
We just demonstrate, I think they help demonstrate that this is possible. You know, every building that, you know, someone poises a wrecking ball in the neighborhood does not have to come down. And also, you know, lots of credit to the Courier because they're the ones who stepped up financially. But the biggest moment of trouble for me was when I was asked by the union leader to talk about the process that was taking place in negotiations. And I said, the only faith involved in these talks with the diocese is bad faith on the part of the bishop. And apparently that's why I will not be going to heaven in my next life.
Well, there may be other reasons too, John.
Yeah, right.
I hope so. I hope so.
Well, hey, you know, look, that was quite the effort and undertaking, and you know, all that organization, all that work. Can you walk through a little bit about that for folks who are listening, who don't know all the backdrop? And I certainly don't. I've watched some of it unfold over the last couple of years. But can you just walk through the Chandler House and how this came to be, and all the work that it took to get it preserved?
Oh, certainly. You know, in the beginning, it came to our attention when it was in the media that the building was available for the sale price of $10,000, which was an outrageous number to attach to so glorious an historic mansion. But the catch was you had to move the building from its current site. And in very short words, it was impossible to do. The building is so large. The neighborhood is loaded with all kinds of utility wires and everything that would have to be, you know, undone and compromised to move the building. So it was a sham from the beginning. And so we jumped on that and made it known to people that this is basically shorthand for, we're going to tear this down, but we're going to pretend to make a good faith effort to preserve it. So, you know, we jumped in, and our mission on these types of things, mine personally as well as my institution, is the notion of adaptive reuse, to take an existing building that may have outlived its original purpose and utilize it in a way that will give it life for another generation or two. My good friends at Brady Sullivan recently asked me if I would go down to Lawrence, Mass. With them. They just rededicated the 27th Mill building they've adapted for residential use, the old Pacific Mills building. And they just asked me if I would go down and talk about, you know, what adaptive reuse is about. So that's what's happening with the Chandler House. It's being adapted to new uses by the Courier. And, you know, we couldn't be happier. And we're happy to recognize the civilians, the individuals who got together, created a Facebook page, started handing out signs. We had demonstrations outside the building. And ultimately, you know, our our nagging presence was felt. And, you know, the Courier was able to strike a deal with the diocese.
Our guest is John Clayton. John is the executive director of the Manchester Historic Association, the Milliard Museum, which is located at 200 Bedford Street in Manchester. We'll talk more about that coming up. We'll take a quick break. Feldis and Kale continues on 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We're presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and our local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Welcome back. It's Feldis and Kale at 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We're presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and our local New Hampshire dairy farmers. John Clayton, our guest. John, longtime union leader, scribe. John, you've done just about everything in the media during your career. The union leader, Chronicle. You've done hockey games with me. You've done so much over the years, and now the director of the Milliard Museum. And you've just done a miraculous job there. And people, you know, that have not been there, not familiar with it, don't know that there's always a very special exhibit on display. And what is being exhibited right now?
Well, we have one that's on display right now and two in the works, which I would love to talk to you about.
All right.
But the one we have right now is on the history of Pandora sweaters. Now, you don't have to have lived in Manchester to have worn a Pandora sweater, which were manufactured in the Milliard from 1940 up until 2000, the year 2000. And so we are celebrating their presence in the Milliard. We have a ton of Pandora sweaters on display. And more importantly, we have a lot of this, the patterns, the design fashions that the sweater creators used. A woman who now lives in New York, Sally Aaron, was good enough to reach out to us. She was one of their lead designers. And so she sent us all of these raw materials that contributed to the manufacture of Pandora sweaters. And I have to tell you, as a kid growing up in Manchester, Pandora was just, you know, literally a household name. But it's amazing when we explore this. They advertised in the New York Times Sunday Magazine, Women's Wear Daily. Their products were sold all over the country. They made 60,000 sweaters a week in the Milliard. And it, again, the numbers are staggering, and the beauty of this exhibit is there are still so many former Pandora employees around that this has been like a magnet for them to come to visit the museum.
Oh, I'm sure it has 60,000 sweaters a week. I thought you were going to say 60,000 sweaters a year. 60,000
no,
a week.
They actually, they manufactured sweaters for Macy's in New York.
Yeah.
And the only covenant attached to that was they had to put a Macy's sticker on the, inside the sweater rather than Pandora. So there are people all over the country who have worn Pandora products who may not know it. And our position is that a lot of them in Manchester do know it. And our own board member, Gail York, whose family owned Indian Head Athletics for many years, was a model for Pandora when she was in high school. So we have a photograph of Gail York in the exhibit modeling Pandora sweaters, which ran in advertisements around the country.
That is really something. So probably the vast percentage of the people who did wear Pandora sweaters over the years never even knew about it. You know, if it had a Macy's tag in it or some other, you know, major chain.
Sears,
right? There you go. But,
Marshall Fields in Chicago. Yeah. Think about, you know, the big retailers around the country, and they all purchased Pandora sweaters and basically just changed the tag.
Yeah.
But the fact that it came out of Manchester is undeniable.
And it was a huge employer at the time as well.
It was more than 1,000 employees at any given time when John F. Kennedy was running for president in 1960. That was one of his stops. So he worked on the production floor, shaking hands and greeting the workers. And we have an image of him with Saul Sador, who was May Gruber's first husband, who passed away. And the family celebration for the Sador family is a big part of this exhibit.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see it. I haven't seen it. How long is it? Is it up, John?
It will be up through the end of August, at which point we're going to be installing a statewide photo exhibit. We've been working with the New Hampshire Historical Society in Concord, as well as a lot of other individual photographers. The New Hampshire Society of Photographic Artists, we started before COVID on a year-long project to capture, you know, life in New Hampshire through photography. We got delayed, as everybody else did, but come October, we're going to open that exhibit. Our focus in Manchester will be on the Merrimack Valley, but there will be similar exhibits, you know, in the White Mountains, in the Lakes region, in the Upper Valley. So that's coming up in October.
So, John, where is the Pandora sign right now?
We have the largest existing chunk of it right in the Mill Yard Museum. We were able to salvage the word sweaters. The original sign said Home of Pandora Sweaters. So we were able to salvage that. We've had all the neon repaired, so it's on display as a part of the Pandora exhibit. So when you walk in, you'll see this glorious neon, blue neon sign welcoming you. And when the exhibit ends, it's going to become a part of our permanent collection. We have a brick wall in our loom room where it will be installed into perpetuity. So we were really happy we were able to save that portion of the sign.
Because, Dan, that was a big thing. When you came into Manchester, you always saw the Pandora sweaters sign coming into Manchester. I remember it as a young kid when my mother and aunt used to bring me up to Manchester, and they, you know, just as a passenger, and specifically to go to Pandora. Yeah.
Yes. It was. They had to employ two off-duty police officers to direct traffic coming off Granite Street in Manchester off of 93 because... Wow. You know, as they had a factory store there, and it was just a mecca for shoppers heading up to either the mountains or the lakes region.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It was probably the number one tourist attraction in Manchester at the time. Right?
We're hoping to supplant it at the Mill Yard Museum. Yeah. We want to be the number one. Unfortunately, we have this other museum in town you may have heard of called the Courier. So we're in constant constant cooperation with them. We call it cooperatition. We're after the same audience.
Friendly competition, though. I mean, you know, there's so much to explore in Manchester that people don't even know about, really. Like, you know, the Mill Yard Museum, your neighbor at the Sea Science Center, the Courier, of course, which is, you know, really internationally renowned, but. So many gems in Manchester that people really aren't aware of.
And, you know, this summer, you know, tourism season is starting to get underway, so we're certainly seeing our numbers tick up. And unfortunately, our second-in-command, Jeff Barraclough, has left us to take over as executive director of the Moffett Ladd House in Portsmouth. So I will spend the balance of my day interviewing candidates to replace him, which is impossible. But, you know, we have to move on, so... we've become, like WMUR, we've become a real proving ground for young talent who work at the Mill Yard Museum and then go on to bigger and better things.
Well, John, you have done such amazing work. You've done, different occupations, all kinds of stuff. You know, even done hockey with Ken. And so
that was his biggest throw.
That was right his there. Biggest.
Well, Chris Carpenter, who went on to great fame as a pitcher with the St. Louis Cardinals, was among the young people who we covered when we did the games. Brian LaRochelle became a huge star at the University of New Hampshire, and they were high school kids when we were doing their games. So yep. It was, again, not unlike the Milliard Museum. It was great to see these young people take steps towards stardom.
And in all of these things that you've done, what are some of the things that pop out, like interesting facts about either Manchester or New Hampshire that you think our listeners may not know that kind of pop out in your mind over your long career doing a variety of good work?
Well, a lot of it, Dan, is about the people. When I wrote one of my books in the foreword, the book is called You Know You're in New Hampshire When. It's 101 things about New Hampshire that you should celebrate and recognize. I talked about the fact that, yes, New Hampshire is remarkable because of our geography and our weather through the seasons, but ultimately it comes down to the people. You know, we have this smidgen of arable land that we somehow managed to turn into prosperity in New Hampshire, but inevitably it comes down to the people. And I just think people of New Hampshire are blessed with a character trait that my good friend Steve Taylor from the Department of Agriculture called cussedness. Cussedness, what's that? Well, that's when the guy wants to sell his old vintage race car for $100 and you offer him $50, and he gets in and he releases the brake and lets it roll down the hill and slam into a tree and says, okay, now you can have it for $50. That's a uniquely New Hampshire thing.
Right.
I guess so. You know, John, over the years, I know you've done your share of walking tours and trolley tours of the Queen City in relation to the Milliard Museum. Any on tap for this summer?
We are going to be doing a walking tour of Elm Street, which we found has incredible interest. And back in February of 2019, when the primary was coming up, the mayor asked me if I would be interested in doing some kind of political tourism event. So we started doing historic trolley tours of the candidates in Manchester through the years. So we put together, you know, small flash books for people with pictures of John F. Kennedy in Victory Park and Dwight Eisenhower in Veterans Park. And they were hugely popular. We did it on an old historic trolley the city had recently acquired, and capacity was 40. We sold it out every time we did it. Mm-hmm. And an unfortunate offshoot of that is that I contracted COVID before anybody in New Hampshire knew what it was. In February 29th of that year, I was at the Elliott, and they said, something's wrong with you, and it, in fact, was COVID. Hopefully that won't happen the next time we do a tour, but we are looking forward to doing a couple of tours this summer. And at the same time, Christy and I are at work right now on an exhibit around the history of the Queen City Athletic Hall of Fame. Huh? We accidentally came into possession of the original plaque, which is engraved with 144 names, and right away, a light went on over my head saying, this could be a great exhibit. Unfortunately, there is no repository of photographs of those people who were inducted into the Hall of Fame. So I've spent the last 3 months on a quest to acquire as many photographs as I can of those who were inducted. Fortunately, my wife is among the inductees, so I had no problem getting that photograph, which I took myself, of her in her playing days at what is now Southern New Hampshire University. And it's just been a great trip down memory lane for me. And we're hoping that the second week in October, we'll have an opening event. And a lot of the local celebs, Ken, you know half of them by name, we're hoping they'll turn out for that that exhibit opening.
Wow, that is great. So keep us posted on that. What does the summer look like at the Milliard Museum? Your hours, and I know you have some special deals too.
Sure. We're open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 4. And you mentioned our good friends at the Sea Science Center. We're involved in a grant proposal with them for the New Hampshire Humanities Council to work on oral histories of some of the people who've contributed to the Milliard's tech explosion, which is going on now. Dean Kamen's foremost among them. But we have a dual Saturday pass with Sea Science Center for $13. You can visit both museums. And it's just a further example of the integration we want to have with them. You know, the whole focus on STEM, when you think about engineering and you look at Manchester's history, so much of what Amersfoort manufacturing did was tied to engineering. If you think about the canals, the water they used to power the turbines themselves, there's a lot of overlap, and we hope to really take advantage of that through the summer.
Yeah, the Midyard is really an amazing area filled with high-tech companies. You mentioned Dean Kamen. I think he got the whole thing started, but it's just turned out to be just an amazing magnet for those high-tech companies.
And it's interesting because the New Hampshire Sunday News did a story a couple of months ago about the future of the Midyard, you know, what will happen post-COVID. And I was happy enough to be quoted in the stories talking about parking in the Midyard. I'll know the Midyard's back when I can't find a place to park my car. We're not there yet, but we all remember what it was like before. And all the people who talk about going back to normal, well, normal in the Midyard is 98% occupancy. You know, it's just an amazing hub for education, technology, entertainment. I should mention my sister-in-law, Peaches, owns Cotton, the restaurant, which is still not back to their regular operations. They don't have enough staff to open for lunch, for example. So we still have a ways to go, but I'm ever the optimist. I think we'll be back on track very, very soon.
And I know COVID obviously had an impact on everybody throughout the country in one way or another. But specifically, what impact did it have on the downtown area of Manchester? I know a number of restaurants did close, and some, unfortunately, permanently. What impact did it have? And you know, do you expect it to bounce back and be back to normal in the not too distant future?
Well, I certainly do personally, again, ever the optimist, but I think the move to remote work as well as remote learning just simply took a lot of the lifeblood out of the Midyard, which contributes to downtown. I am in the unique position of serving as the director, the chairman of the Chamber of Commerce Downtown Committee, which since I took over 6 years ago, we have always stressed is downtown and the Midyard. The unfortunate thing from our history is that the Midyard was deliberately set apart from the downtown when Amesquite was first created in 1831. That was done, for specific reasons. So we're trying to undo over 100 years of history and trying to integrate the downtown and the Midyard rather than segregate. So that was what we were working toward before the COVID hit. And I think we can get right back to that because the synergy between the downtown and the Midyard was amazing. And the downtown was simply hurt by the lack of bodies in the Midyard because of, again, the move to remote learning. So I'm thinking we're going to get right back to that.
And there are also, if people don't know it, or haven't been to Manchester in a while, two brand spanking new hotels in downtown Manchester, one in the Midyard.
Which I am in the process of exploiting even as we speak.
Exploiting?
I went to the opening of the True by Hilton in the Midyard back in February, I think. It was one of the first events I attended where there were more than 20 people. Everybody had masks on. But what we've done is we've put together discount coupons for all the hotels, the Hilton Grand, you know, by the ballpark, as well as the new Marriott on Lake Ave. And we're offering them $5 admission cards. So any of their guests, ordinary admission is $8 for the museum, so they'll have $5 gift cards to give to their guests to come and visit the Midyard Museum. I've noticed increased foot traffic, especially around the True in the Midyard, and that just made me think that, you know, this is something we should be doing. So Christy designed something yesterday. It's being printed right now.
Wow, outstanding. So, John, your forecast is that the future is bright for downtown Manchester, including the Midyard.
We've known each other long enough, Ken. I keep referring to myself as this, cockeyed optimist, but I am. And I just think you can feel the energy, the kinetic energy that's pent up for people wanting to get back out and get engaged with other folks again. And I just think this summer is going to be a magical time as we watch this unfold.
Well, I hope so. And hope downtown gets to be as vibrant as it once was. In downtown Manchester, and I think over time it will evolve and be that way. But John, we do need a prime tenant for that building on Elm Street known as the SNHU Arena.
I agree, and there is a Save Manchester Hockey movement underway. If you don't know, we actually even have a Twitter page, Save Manchester Hockey, and behind the scenes, folks like Jeff Eisenberg and Tim Beckert are churning away, hoping that we can find, I think the only answer is another AHL team, because, that level of play really mattered to the people of Manchester. You know, this is a hockey town, and I think, you know, the step down to the ECHL wasn't well received, but I think the energy there is now. So I'm not saying we go to Providence and entice the Bruins to come north, but I wouldn't be upset if that were to take place.
Yeah, I think you're right about the AHL. It has to be, I do believe, a team in the AHL. But, you know, we have, I mean, if you put the SNHU Arena back in the American Hockey League today, it would be one of the top buildings. I mean, it is one of the top arenas in the Northeast. There's no question about it in terms of, you know, its size and its space and its facilities as well to be able to host teams. I mean, it really is a terrific building, and, you know, unfortunately right now for the last few years it's been underutilized. So hopefully something can happen in the not-too-distant future.
Terribly underutilized. In fact, not just hockey, concerts have really gone crazy. Part of the reason is the overlap with the Boston market and non-compete clauses with some of the talent that will play in Boston that if they play in Manchester, they'll be taken out of circulation in other cities. So those are all things that can be overcome. Tim Becker is, you know, a whiz at managing that place. And I know, unfortunately, when COVID first hit, they knew immediately that this was going to be bigger than most people thought. And they said then that there would not be a concert booked before November. Well, here we are now in June on the other side of that November, waiting for Eric Church to take the stage at the SNHU Arena for the first show in almost 2 years.
Yeah. Well, John, always great to catch up with you. And again, the Milliard Museum located at 200 Bedford Street in Manchester, in the Milliard. If you want to make a weekend of it, I mean, you can stay in the Milliard at the True Hotel there or the other right? And get a
get that discount card and then come to the museum.
Get that discount. That's right.
Save $3.
There's so much to do, I mean, within walking distance of that place. I mean, you can check out a ball game or two and check out the Milliard Museum, the Sea Science Center, the Courier, and so much more, and all downtown has to offer. So lots of things to do. You can check out that Pandora exhibit at the Milliard Museum. And just, you know, the museum itself with its permanent displays is terrific. And the special exhibits are always very informative and wonderful as well. John, thanks so much for being with us. We truly appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
Thanks to both of you. I appreciate it. And we'll talk soon.
All right. Very good. That is John Clayton, the executive director of the Milliard Museum in the Milliard, 200 Bedford Street in Manchester. And Amy Hall is going to be joining us soon, but we will take a break. And Feltus and Kale, I almost got the billing wrong, Dan. I'm sorry.
Don't worry about it. That's a major violation of our contract.
Feltus and Kale will continue right after these words. 103.9, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and our local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9, 1450, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It is Feltus and Kale. I will not get the billing wrong again, at least today, I hope. It's Feltus, Kale, and Hall right now. Amy Hall is joining us. Amy! How are
you?
Good
morning.
Good morning, Amy. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I love any order you put our names in. We're all spectacular, aren't we?
That's right.
You know, Dan brought the scale in today.
I did. You may recall, Amy, that Ken has pledged to do the full ice cream trail, all 42 stops.
I'm at number three right now. I've done three.
And in the process of it, also has pledged to lose weight. So you may recall that, Amy, that pledge last week on the show. And in solidarity with Ken, I've pledged to do the same thing. And so I brought in today a scale from our house. And so we're going to do a live weigh-in to start this off. Are you excited about this, Amy?
I'm more than excited. I don't even have the right words. You know, Dan, you are the best. I very clearly remember this. And you and I agreeing we were going to lock arms in this. And now you've joined. I am all for it.
I'm joined, and what I'm going to do now is walk over to Ken's studio, because we have a glass separator.
Yes.
That's the way it's set up, because sometimes the debates get very volatile, so they had to put a separation plexiglass between us. So I'm going to walk over to Ken's studio.
Very good.
I'll be over there in a second.
Now, do my headphones count? I mean, we can take off maybe a half pound for the headphones, all right? We can take off a half pound for the headphones. All right, we're doing this live here. On the radio. So I have to stand up, move the scale over in my direction here, and keep talking, and get on the scale and see what I weigh in at. So let's see.
Now, is this starting weight? This is the first time? Or did your starting weight start three shops ago?
No, this will be the starting weight, because this will be the official weight. It's, oh boy, I'll tell you, I think I broke the scale. I think I broke the scale, Amy.
No, you did not.
I'm getting on. It's all these numbers are moving around here.
Well, why don't we do that? We got to do a drum roll first.
All right, drum roll first.
All right, here we go. We got it.
All right, drum roll, and here we go. Oh, Dan has the official drum roll. Okay, I'm going to step on. I have my headphones on, so take off a half pound.
Step off.
I got to step off now. Okay. Step off. Step on. Clap on. Clap on the clapper. Remember the clapper? See, I broke the scale. See, it's can't decide. Can't decide. But we're going to round it off here. We're going to round it off to... All right. Let's round it off to 223, all right?
223.
Let's round 223. 223. Okay. Although I weighed in less than that this morning. I'm fully dressed here. All right, Dan.
All right, I'm going to hop on here. We got a another drum roll here.
All right.
Here we go.
All right. Just what you've been waiting for, the weight of the former gubernatorial candidate, Dan Feldes. He's at 202. 202. So Dan is very svelte. He is svelte. I'm at 223. Dan is at 202.
You guys are the best. So we're going to track this weekly, correct?
We are going to track this. I don't know about if we're going to track it weekly, Amy, but, you know.
Monthly.
Periodically. Let's put it that way. We'll track it periodically.
We can. No, we'll do it periodically. And, you know, we'll see if there's a correlation between what type of ice cream stops we've gone to and what our corresponding weight might be.
You guys are awesome. I think this is so fun. Thank you. Okay, I diligently took notes in my planner while you were doing that. So I will also help you keep track in the event that there is a period where we don't write it down. I will have it here.
Okay, you got it. I can see, I heard your pen or pencil drop right there.
Mm-hmm.
You had a little pen drop there. So I have been so far, Amy, just to keep track here and make it official. The first one I went to was, as I told you, True Confections and Candies and Gifts on Loudoun Road in Concord, which is great. And they've all been outstanding. I mean, how can you go wrong with ice cream on a nice summer day, right? You can't.
You can't.
Really quite difficult.
You can't. And the next stop I made was at Dudley's Homemade Ice Cream in Loudoun.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one, which was on Sunday, was in Kingston at What's the Scoop.
Yes, yep. Fantastic. And they're all, you know, what I have to say, too, is that, you know, I know all the shops, of course, you know, we've worked with a few of them over the years. And, you know, I think about the people when you mention the name, you know, I think about Carol and, you know, I think about Paul and I think about who owns these shops. And I just love that in addition to the, you know, amazing business and the amazing ice cream, which you can never, of course, go wrong with, but the amazing owners and the real people that own and run these shops, it's such a feel-good, full-circle moment. And who knew? Who knew ice cream could be so complex? But now we know. It's just a all-encompassing, feel-good moment, even outside of the ice cream, from the owners to the employees to the experience.
It's a wonderful way to support the local economy, our local dairy producers and farmers, our local ice cream shops, and just get to, you know, get to see New Hampshire. And so check it out, the ice cream trail. Amy, what is your favorite ice cream? I don't know if we've talked about this yet on this show, but what is your favorite ice cream, flavor of ice cream?
People ask me that a lot after putting this trail together. Hands down, all the time, cookies and cream.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, what about you, Ken?
I think my all-time favorite flavor is rum raisin.
Ooh,
I don't think I've ever had that.
And it's fantastic. It really and truly is.
Is there real rum in it?
In some variations, there is, but I don't believe it's employed by many of the ice cream stands in this area or any area for that matter. But I think truly, originally, it was. It did have some real rum in it, but tastes like rum anyway, whether it's real or not. But I got that from my mother because that was unequivocally, my mother, who was pretty much a teetotaler, unequivocally, rum raisin was her favorite ice cream.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's mine anyway.
Yeah, type of ice cream you got to show an ID for.
But I'm very versatile, though. Very versatile. I can eat any flavor.
You're the utility player of ice cream eating.
That's right.
Utility player.
And in all three of these cases, when I've gone to the shop, the three shops I mentioned, I have not had rum raisin as yet. I have not. I've had two hot fudge sundaes and one strawberry sundae. So, and they've all been absolutely wonderful. But, you know, ice cream is just a wonderful thing, I'm going to do this trail without a doubt. 39 stops to go, but I've got plenty of time and we'll do it. Let's hope anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Dan, you're up. What's your favorite?
Well, I'm just going to go with, maybe this is just too conventional, but I'm going to go with standard chocolate ice cream, and especially our girls, Iris and Josie, love it. So that means I love it too.
Well, earlier this week we celebrated, right? Chocolate Day?
I was just going to say that. It was earlier this week, Monday, that it was actually National Chocolate Ice Cream Day. And here's a fun fact for you. Dan, you might think you're a little unconventional. But chocolate ice cream is the number two pick across the nation for people's favorite ice cream. Do you know what the number one most favorite ice cream is in surveys of people across the nation?
Yes, rum raisin.
Dan, you got it. No.
Vanilla.
It is actually vanilla ice cream.
Yep.
And, you know, the day that I learned that, I was kind of surprised. I love vanilla ice cream more vanilla bean, but I was wondering, it's probably because it's just a perfect ice cream that you can top with anything.
Right.
You know, it's a complimentary, flavor for any palate. You want to put hot fudge on it, it works. You want to pour a shot of rum on top of it, I suppose that would work too. You're not as unconventional as you think. You're number two in line.
Well, I mean, and vanilla is great too. It's, as you said, it's versatile. It's as versatile ice cream as Ken is a versatile ice cream eater.
There you go. Probably even more so. Amy Hall is with us. Amy is the executive director of Granite State Dairy Promotion, our proud sponsor here on Feldis and Kale, along with our local New Hampshire dairy farmers. We're at 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldis and Kale, we are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and our local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Amy Hall is with us, Executive Director of Granite State Dairy Promotion. What's new with our New Hampshire dairy farmers? Anything newsworthy?
Oh, of course. There's always something newsworthy. I'm glad you asked the question. Yesterday was, a big day of celebration for myself and the entire Granite State Dairy Promotion Board of Directors. We had our first face-to-face in-person meeting up at the New Hampshire Farm Bureau. So it was a bit of a party, a bit of a meeting. So that was great. And, you know, one of the topics of discussion that we got into heavily, and we all decided that as an industry, myself and the board and dairy producers all across the state, is that it's really time that we start to put our full steam, full force, full forward effort back into New Hampshire's own utterly amazing local dairy on the shelves. Where we left off, you know, we were making some forward progress until COVID unfortunately hit and the world stopped. But now that everything is sort of going back to normal and, you know, vaccinations are being received, we believe it's time that we light a fire under this program again, because dairy producers very much have always and will always need support of the public. The way that the pricing works, the way that government pricing works, is far too complex to explain, you know, in the next 5 or 10 minutes that we have together. We will get into that someday. They don't make as much money as what it takes to produce milk. And that is the very hard, fast, and realistic reality that they fight every day. Now, are there years they can scrape by with an extra 75 cents? Sure. But that extra 75 cents now goes to not using duct tape to repair the engine. Now maybe we can afford some actual nuts and bolts to put it back together, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So this program, just to remind people what this is Governor Sununu had passed a law a couple of years ago that, you know, would allow consumers, this is not a tax, I want to be very clear, that would allow consumers by their own choice to purchase a gallon of New Hampshire's own milk for an extra 50 cents a gallon. Now, we did surveys through the UNH Survey Center. We did on-site surveys at Market Basket in Hannaford, phone surveys, you name it. If there is a survey available to us, we definitely conducted it. And an overwhelming amount of people, over 80%, said they would absolutely spend an extra 50 cents a gallon on milk if they knew that money would be returned back to our New Hampshire dairy producers. So we were making some positive, you know, forward motion. We had a little bit of momentum. Our biggest hurdle then, as it is now, is finding a processor, somebody who is willing to separate New Hampshire milk from a more of a blend that might be coming in from other states like New York or Connecticut or Maine, which nothing against those states. Their industries are just as important. But it is our role to keep New Hampshire in business. So full force going forward, the commissioner is absolutely on board with this, and we're going to do everything that we can as an industry together, locked arms, to make sure that we can get some money back to our farmers in a free market scenario.
That's great news, Amy. And having served on the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, worked on that legislation, bipartisan legislation with Senator Bradley, Governor Sununu signed it, and Commissioner Jasper certainly supportive. It's great to hear that this has been prioritized, and you know, you're doubling down on the effort to launch this.
Yeah, and you know, I used to say all the time is that, you know, when this first started and we were running up against a lot of brick walls, a lot of them, is, you know, my line in the sand has always been, we're not going away.
Right.
And I think that, you know, there are some powers that be that, you know, we're hoping over a period of time that the more no's we received, the more likely we were to go away. You know, unfortunately, some of the players in the game should never undermine, you know, the will and the heart and the drive that is the dairy industry here in New Hampshire. And, you know, these are individuals who want support from the people who want to support them. And that's why we're so very excited about this, because consumers ask all the time, we don't want to lose our farms. What can we do? What can we do? And I mean, you can tell people all day long, buy milk, but how much milk can one person drink? At the end of the day, they're looking for something tangible.
Yeah.
That they can go into a store and say, okay, an extra 50 cents, and I know that's going to support a dairy producer, that's what I'm asking for. This is what I want. And, you know, for us, you know, for me in marketing, it's a no-brainer. Number one, if you're a retailer who proudly stands up and says, yes, we are here, we want to support our dairy producers, that's a win. I mean, whether or not you want to do it for the right or the wrong reasons, meaning, just to get the publicity out of it, which, by the way, I don't believe that's why people would do it, but it is a portion of it. It's a win there. You know, if you find a processing plant who stands up and says the same thing, there is another win there. So,
absolutely.
You know, it's just, it's an all-encompassing benefit. So right now we need to figure out, we need to sit back down at the table together and dissect what is going to work for you, what is not going to work for you. How
absolutely.
Can we overcome this obstacle, and how can we progress this into something that doesn't only help New Hampshire, but could very well become a national model to allow dairy producers to succeed based on the support from the general public.
Amy, we thank you. We will be with you again next week, and thanks so much for what you do.
Absolutely. Thank you, gentlemen. Keep up eating that ice cream and losing weight.
Oh, we will. Amy Hall, Executive Director of Granite State Dairy Promotion, Feltus and Kale, right here on WKXL.